Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mark Boyle, and this is The Mark Boyle Show. Thank you for tuning in and also for watching on YouTube. Really appreciate it. If you're finding me on YouTube, be sure to subscribe and click the bell for notifications. Give me a thumbs up if you enjoy what you're seeing on YouTube. A little bit of housekeeping. Been changing things up a little bit as far as my podcast. It's all over on Podbeam now, along with Contra Radio Network and their Podbeam account. So we got plenty of places to watch and see. So I started something new on the website, prepperguy.com, and it's called Spotlight. And the first one is for Leanda. She's a CrossFit junkie, I would call her. But she's heavy into CrossFit, and she's trying to make the finals so she can be in the world championship for weightlifting. And she's also a fighter for suffering from cancer. So I was hoping that I could just at least get her some attention, explain how hard the fight is that she's going through and how that makes her a real survivor and a fighter, which I think is important for all of us as preppers to not give up and to continue to fight until we're completely taken out of the fight. So check that out. We'll start putting spotlights up there every once in a while when I find a good cause. So that's the new spotlight section in prepperguy.com. So check that out. So I'm sitting here trying to figure out just what I should talk about. And, you know, it's easy when you do a show where you just take a couple things out of the media and you talk about them and you bring a perspective to it. As for me and my show, I'm kind of assigned duties of talking about being prepared and preparedness. And you would think that there would be a million things to talk about with that, but no, there's not. We could talk about beans, Band-Aids, and bullets, but there's thousands and thousands of videos on YouTube on how to store food, different types of food, how to can it, how to jerk it, how to preserve it, how to salt it, and stuff like that. There's a lot of bushcraft content creators on YouTube and even blogs that talk about how to survive in a bushcraft type environment. But I like to take it to a level of, you know, more of why do we prep and not so much the how do we prep. And I think that's important because we all need to know why we're remaining focused and keeping our eye on the ball. Well, as I look through the media and watch the news and pay attention, if you look at our economy, that would be a reason why we should prepare. Because if there's an economic collapse, it won't just affect our community or local area. It will pretty much affect everything in America if it's a real meltdown. And that effect will ripple through the rest of the world, causing a lot of strife, famine, hunger, money shortages, bank closures across the world, which will then in turn cause goods and our just-in-time inventory to maybe collapse and hiccup a little bit. And then goods aren't getting sent to America. And we really rely on a lot of our trading partners around the world to bring us the produce that we expect to be in season year-round because it comes from Nicaragua or some other place where the climate's better. Coffee, all these things are being brought in from other regions around the world. So when our economy collapses, many people might choose to not do business with us because it's such a mess. And big companies and corporations that bring you your coffee might not be able to pay in gold or silver. You know, they're used to working on lines of credit. And so I see the economy looming as a very serious threat because for years, our economic leaders have played this game with our currency. And yes, it's fiat currency, and all currency is a form of fiat currency unless you're trading gold or silver. The problem is that when they change its value through manipulations and voodoo math to where they play these games where they print a bunch of bonds, they sell the bonds to to themselves sometimes, and then that creates an asset in the Federal Reserve, and then they lend that money out, and then it filters through our economy. And these are all just games. And you can keep it afloat for quite a while, which we have done for probably close to 50 years. But you look at the stock market and it's highly overvalued. It used to be that if you had a company and your profit every year was $1 million and you had 1 million shares, then each share would be worth $1. And it was very simple math, and you could pretty much value stock based on the income and the profit and those things that are factored into it, and dividing it by the shares, and that would tell you the share value. Well, now it's based on different math, probably common core math. And so we have a real volatile system there because it's being played by a different set of rules. Very few people understand those rules. And so it makes it more fragile if there's a hiccup, because the money's not really there. You know, how can a company like Amazon be losing money and still on an asset sheet be showing money and then turning around and borrowing money from the Fed at 0% interest, leveraging themselves, and yet still be trading on the stock exchange at a high value, when if you did the math the old way, their value of the stocks and the shares would have gone down? And we don't always understand that. We have maybe a concept of the markets, but from all the experts that I listen to that aren't just talking heads for the main media groups, that, you know, real economists are not just telling us that we need to prepare for some kind of bubble popping, but a lot of them are kind of a pseudo type of preppers, because most of them are talking, saying you better be prepared, you better have real assets like cars and trucks or property or homes, things that are of value in a real collapsed economy, to where that's your home. You own it. You don't have a piece of paper that says you have 1,000 ounces of gold, but you really don't have those. It's a piece of paper that says you magically have some gold somewhere else. Now, what if you needed that gold shilling or whatever it's valued at when the world collapses to buy some food to feed your family? No one's going to take a piece of paper, because that also is fiat currency. So I look at it and it's kind of scary, and it's teetering according to the experts. And these aren't just your fly-by-night experts. Some of these people have been trading and warning for decades. And so they might not always be right on the money when they say, you know, next year we're looking at gold to spike and then it doesn't. But see, that's because the gold markets and the silver markets, precious metals, are being manipulated also. And the feds and the government have what they call plunge protection, to where if the market really starts to crash, they can dump a bunch of money in there and basically stop it from collapsing. But it's fake money also. But by doing that, it brings and holds down the value of gold or silver. So it too is a game. And so we're not really seeing a honest picture of our economy and what we have to expect if things were to crash, because it's become so convoluted that they would be talking about things. I mean, I watched a business show on the television, and after this guy talked for about 3 minutes, I told my wife, I go, I don't understand how they've created a language to where I can listen to somebody for 5 minutes and not understand a thing they said. And it's kind of a weird anomaly, because you can usually grasp at enough words that make sense to go, what he's saying or trying to say in context is this. You don't understand any of it unless you're in that world. Well, when you listen to experts saying all that talk is saying you better be preparing, that's kind of scary coming from a New York Wall Street kind of guy that's saying you should have a year's supply of food. You should diversify and get some precious metals in your safe. You need to be ready with food and shelter for something bad to happen. All the monopoly money be damned. If you don't have real assets like a home and a vehicle and food, then you're not going to survive this. And so they might not always tell the exact date, but like I say, it's a fluid and changing target because there's so many games going on that even the best of the best can't see what somebody else on the other side is doing to manipulate that or to change it or to keep it from falling apart. But eventually, as anything, like a house of cards or anything, no matter how many people are trying to keep the cards at the bottom from sliding out, if one person makes a mistake, it can collapse. It's a scary thing. To me, I'm not invested at all in any of the markets. So it doesn't scare me on that level, but it does scare me to think that overnight, our dollar could become worthless and of no value whatsoever to the rest of the world where we buy our food. You go to a supermarket and they might go, "We're not taking dollars. The banks are shut down. The debit machines are not working. So what are you going to pay with?" Now, after a couple of days, they might start saying, "Yeah, we'll take silver coins because they're easily denominationable." But that takes time to figure out the value of silver per ounce when there's no monetary system to use as a baseline. So you have to go into different kinds of math and understand that, well, normally if I was working for an hour for you, I would get X amount of dollars. And that X amount of dollars would buy me, you know, a pound of meat and some milk and some eggs. So if the store owner wants so much silver, then what he's saying is that silver has now become valued at an hour's worth of wages. But see, it's all fuzzy at first. So it's really going to be a negotiation thing. That's why it's good to have enough food and water and shelter and supplies to last 3 to 6 months so things can work out mathematically with people that are trying to be fair to where an ounce of silver now is worth this much old money that's now worthless, but we can give a value to the things you want to buy and the things you're trading to where it's fair, and that's free market, you know. So you need a baseline as a way of figuring the value of your time, that person's goods, and the silver or whatever you're bartering with. Because it'd be easy to say, "Well, I had this thing, I paid $1,000 for it, you need it, and you have this stuff that's worth back before the money collapsed worth $1,000, so it's an even exchange." But when you get into more abstracts, it's like now all of a sudden you're saying, what is your time worth? Would I be able to go to someone's property and provide 8 hours work in exchange for room, board, food, shelter, maybe some clothing? Then what they're saying is what we're giving you is worth 8 hours work. So do you accept it or not? You might say, "Well, heck, you know, that's only $100 worth of stuff for 10 hours work. I guess that's $10 an hour." Okay. So you see that the economy is fragile and it's important. It's very important to us to get through our lives. You know, they say there's no inflation, but if you look at a box of cereal, when I was a kid, they were pretty much full of cereal. Now they're half full. The box is the same size, but it's half full. So the price may have stayed the same, but in all reality, you're paying twice as much or you're paying the same amount for half as much. No matter how you want to look at it, that's inflation. So we have that looming out there, some kind of a collapse in the monetary system. You look at our politics and what they're trying to do to our president, and it's very deceitful. And it's not healthy for the country. And I would be saying that even if our president was a Democrat and the Republicans were doing that. You know, there comes a time when you have to say, we need something and we don't need that. And let's get past it. Let's work it out. Let's make it happen. So all of these things become issues that are causing President Trump grief. And, you know, just like the State of the Union, well, here is Nancy Pelosi saying that our security at our borders is fine, but we can't have a State of the Union because of security issues. I don't know what that means. and why she would say that, but it's kind of like speaking out of both sides of her mouth. So my suggestion is, you know, why don't Trump just write his speech out like he would and deliver it to Congress in writing? That's constitutional. He will have met his obligations. And then let Congress read it or not, whatever. But they want him in that room so they can mock him, walk out, not show up, boo, whatever. And it gives the mainstream media a lot of fodder to continue to bash him. And hate him or not, we need these things to function the way they should in spite of their petty little differences. So we have a political system that is totally on the verge of total collapse. And that's been happening for quite a while, like I've talked about in other shows, you know, with the way we elect presidents and senators and politicians nowadays is a mess, and it's not correct. The way they run things, the way, you know, we only have a two-party system, so it's voting for the lesser of two evils instead of back in the day when George Washington ran, he ran against, I don't know, five or six people. There were the Whigs and the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, the Republican and the Democrat Party and all the whatever there were out there. They all ran. And then they were, George Washington was elected through the Electoral College because the electors were picked by representatives, picked by people in your community that you trust and you elected. So it worked. So you could have five teams on the football field basically at the same time playing the game, but we don't allow that to happen. So the political system is becoming fractured, and it's just getting worse and worse because now they can, you know, the president's always been said that he has the bully pulpit as the president. Well, the anti-president people have the bully pulpit of the media, and we're being fed a lot of propaganda. So where do we look for guidance or at least something to hang on to and say, it's not that bad, Mark. You know, this is a rough spot. No, I don't see it as a rough spot. I see it as the end of the road, and the road has collapsed, and there is no rough spot. A rough spot would be awesome. So the road is washed away now. So when you look at all these things, you try to figure out what is it that I need to do to be prepared. So let's see if we can kind of find some comfort in something when I get back.
Hi, this is John Jeffers inviting you to listen to my show, The Jeffers Brief. You know, on The Jeffers Brief, we discuss topics of interest and concerns for preppers and patriots. You can only find us on the Contra Radio Network on podbean.com or KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority. Hope you join me, and we'll talk to you then.
Okay, well, I am back. So we've talked about, you know, the financial situation and the economy and political spectrum. And so no matter where you turn, you basically get BS or a snow job. Look at the health industry and big pharma. You can't get a straight answer from your doctor on what's good for you and what's not because they're listening to the FDA, another federal agency that's corrupt. So everywhere you turn, you see massive breakdowns, giant cracks in the dam that holds everything back or keeps us in place, however you want to look at it. And I'm sure most people that think more about things instead of just listening to the talking heads on the news and going, hey, we're fine, he just said so, are coming to this conclusion that a trigger effect could happen in any one of these areas. You know, we have Venezuela almost reverting to cannibalism. They're eating their own pets. They're starving. They're rioting. And that all happened when they became socialists. And yet we have politicians in Washington right now saying we should go more toward a socialist society. Well, it's like I said the other show last week, that how many times are we going to watch the same episode of Gilligan's Island and think to ourselves, this time they're going to get rescued? If it's the same episode, then the same things are going to happen because it's a rerun. Do we really need to do a rerun of socialism that has never, ever worked? I don't think so. I find it to be kind of scary and yet stupid. you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, socialism and communism has been tried over and over and over again. And yet these new politicians in Washington are saying, but this time we're going to have a different result. No, you're not. So I'm kind of confused and, you know, approached this show and recording wondering, how do you bring something to the table when there are so many issues? But my goal is to say, here's maybe how you could look at it. Here's how you can deal with it. And I think it really does go back to the Bible or wherever where it says, be in the world, but not of the world. Well, we're definitely in the world. But how do we remove ourselves from the of the world part of it without maybe going completely back in time where you can say, I have my land, I work it, I grow my food, and I'm fine. If the whole world collapsed, I don't think I would notice. Well, that's hard to do. Like I could, you know, have our town I live in go bankrupt and it wouldn't affect me that much. But that's only because we have a business and we make enough money to pay our property tax and some of these unjust and unconstitutional things. But how do you really walk away and yet remain engaged with society and being in the world, but not of the world? And it's tough. And, you know, I read a quote one time that said, man is created to live, not to exist. And it seems like we're all very busy trying to exist. We work so we can live, and we live so we can go out and work some more. And that's an existence, and it's kind of miserable. And people harass me all the time about saying that, well, if the world were to collapse, I'm gonna just disappear into the mountains for a while. And yeah, I'll be living in a cave and it'll be tough trying to not be seen by the crazies until they all die off from stupidity. And they go, well, that's really not a life. It's like, well, no, it's not the life I would like, but I'm alive. And every morning, all I got to do is get up and go find something to eat, work on my shelter. It would actually be kind of peaceful until we start bringing in our ambitions, our dreams, our goals, a bigger house, a fancier car, or college education. Then that forces us to go into more of a high-paced existence mode to where we have to work to eat, need to work so we can get all those toys. But as far as quality of life, how many of you besides me would think that it's not that bad to get up every morning and to go out and hunt some food and find some water and work on your shelter and fix some of your stuff, keep an eye on your gear, make a bow, make some new arrows, set some new traps? I mean, because if your whole goal is to just work to eat and then eat so you can get to work again, well, you'd be doing the same thing. You'd get up, you'd eat, so that way the next day you could get up and eat. So you're working to live and living to work all the same. But how do you do it on a scale that's easier for you? I honestly think that the homesteading movement is really a good step in the right direction for people's peace of mind. And Rob Alderucci does a really good show every once in a while in podcasts and videos, and he's a homesteader and he's really trying to simplify his life. And I think the only reason that most homesteaders have to go out and even make any money is for that ever villainous property tax. But other than that, you can sell enough meat to buy some nails to fix a farm or barn, or you could buy a forge and make your own nails. It would just be a lot less stress. But I think a lot of us, I don't think we like the stress. I'm not going to say that, but we like the creature comforts. And even when I do a project, it's nice to be able to go out and buy, you know, the screws I need, the lumber I need. I have a sawmill, but it's nicer to be able to just get what you need, build what you want, stand back and go, that's really cool. So it's not the trappings of life that have us cornered, but there is a convenience factor to it. and we enjoy that. And I don't think that makes us of the world. It just makes our life a little better. But you eventually have to draw a line and go, I need to simplify my life, because when one of these things or all of them collapse, I want to be in a place to where I just transfer over my thinking and just go, well, I can no longer run to the hardware store and buy those things. But I've built everything over time, and I have what I need. Now all I got to do is get up, learn to use my forge to make some nails, to finish my barn. Work on your things, do your chores, get some food, grow your food, hunt your food, whatever it is, and work for setting up barter groups, and outposts, trading posts, whatever you want to call them. Because when that day comes, then whether we like it or not, or we're prepared or not, will be actually quite irrelevant, any more than you fall out of an airplane. You really can't stop gravity. And so when it happens, whether we like it or not, we will be in that post-apocalyptic world. So things are falling apart all around us, and we will need to deal with it. And that's why I've talked about the philosophy of violence, why surviving an EMP might actually be kind of enjoyable, because it would force us to take a giant step back in time and reevaluate what's important to us. And so why not start preparing for that now? And that's why I mentioned that if you're squared away and all your preps are in line and you got your property and your homestead paid for and you're doing well, why continue to engage on the other side of the fence of the world and get caught up into the rat race? And I think for those people, they are ready for that kind of a collapse. My mindset is to almost become more of a mountain man and live off the land and trap and work with trading companies and groups that need somebody to find things or bring things back. That's my opinion. I'm ready for that. How do you get ready for that where you are in life and how you want to live your life? And that's why it's so important to focus in on your mindset. And what would, if everything collapsed, what would be the minimum you would need to be okay? What would be your goals then? It's not going to be buying the next McMansion or the fastest new Tesla. It's going to be more of pointing your life in that direction, kind of like retirement investing. You go, well, yeah, I'd like to invest to where when I retire, I have, I don't know, $10 million a year to just blow on mad money. And that would be awesome if you could pull that off. But when you really sharpen your pencil and go, if I could get from my retirement plan, you know, 50, 60, 100,000 a year from my retirement, and it would adjust to inflation and all that, I would be fine. Then you start looking at what would that money pay for. And you go, well, my house would be paid for. I'd have a couple vehicles that I like. And as you get older, having the newest, fastest car really isn't a relevant kind of factor, because you're just like, I really like my truck. It runs good. It's comfortable. It does what I need. I'm happy. So I'm sure the cowboys didn't run out and buy the fastest new pony every month. So start looking at your life and going, what could I do without? Not that you have to do without any of that stuff, but if you didn't have this external change that binds you, what would make you happy? Like, you know, having a two-bedroom house because all your kids are grown and gone, that'd be fine. It'd be nice to have a big mansion up on a hill, but really a nice house paid for that's maybe solar powered and really well insulated, enough land to have a small garden and out somewhere where you could go hunt on your own property or on the forest land next to you. And then you look at that as not your big life dream goal. You go, this is my goal to be here. And then once I get to first base, I can figure out whether I can run the second, third, or get a home run. But right now, for me and my family, if we only had this, and that, we would be doing pretty well. Then that should be your goal. And you go, let's get to there. And then we can start, you know, if things haven't collapsed, things are going good at work or in business, you go, then maybe we'll set our sights on making it to second base. But if we get halfway there and everything collapses, we can still fall back on first base. It's not really like baseball because they're not going to get you in a pickle there. You just walk back to second or first base and you go, this is my security safety net. If you make it to second and you get all that squared away and paid for and to where you could stay there if everything collapsed, more property, bigger farmland, more equipment, whatever, but it's all paid for, then you can start planning to move to third base. And then you always have your second base fallback, and really even your first base if you're running your finances right, to where every step you take, you're not letting go of one branch until you got a firm grip on the other branch. And then you let go of the first branch and swing over to the second branch. Kind of like a monkey. They don't let go of both branches at the same time. They always got a firm grip on the next branch. And so we need to look at it that way and try to find comfort in it, because we find comfort in our religions and in our family and all these things. But the big outside variable is the wolves that can be knocking at the door. And so we want to square it all away to where that is always your home base. That is your baseline survival place. And no matter how bad things get, you'll be okay there. Well, I can guarantee you that being in a big city is not the place to have your home base. It might be a place where you live while you're paying for first base, but you're going to want to be away from the crazies, and you're going to want to be able to have 5 or 6 acres. If you're trying to buy that in a big town, it's going to be a fortune. Whereas if you go out in the outskirts and you work on it for 5, 6 years to get your water and all that in there, you're going to pay a lot less for raw land. And then you're going to be off grid. So solar power, really all you're going to need to worry about is a well and really cheap property taxes, unless we can do away with that, which will probably never happen. So how I try to get myself out of this funk when I look at the world and go, this is a mess. Why do I even try? Because I was watching some videos today on Jedediah Smith or Jeremiah Johnson and Hugh Glass and some of these mountain men that survived. They both were attacked by grizzly bears. They both almost died, but they both survived. And you look at it today and you go, boy, I don't know if I could survive if I was mauled by a grizzly bear. Well, the human anatomy hasn't changed. If you got enough grit, you're going to survive. They didn't have ERs and nanosurgeons and put them all back together. They literally sewed themselves together and went back to work. Jedediah Smith, you know, he was awake while he told his guys how to sew his scalp back on. So, you know, you can survive that. So I'm watching that thinking, you know, they had it tough, but really I wouldn't say any tougher than you and I going to work, worried about getting fired, worried about emergency medical bills, worried about all these things. But it seemed like they had a higher level of freedom to set their own course and to make their own lives and to live the way they wanted to. And the only difference was they weren't tied down to big city commitments and being part of the community and all that stuff. That's for the politicians. They were just happy to go trapping. You know, hopefully they didn't irritate any Indians while they were out there. So it's a hard show to do for me today, only because I'm in that place, that funk, that no man's land, to where I'm looking around thinking it looks more shaky than it has most of my life. Because there's every aspect of what holds it all together. All the main timbers of the structure are weakened and ready to fall down. And the only thing that's holding them up is jury rigging and band-aids. So you start feeling really kind of unsafe in a world that is very uncertain, whether it be economically, nutritionally and health-wise, governmental, and the people that are supposed to protect us. I mean, good God, man. The one job the federal government was given was to protect our borders and protect our rights. And they can't even pull that off. So that's become a joke. The economy has become a joke. And there's really not too many important things that really control our existence, our life support, as those things, and they're all weakened. So it's scary. And I think about it and I go, you know, I was talking to my brother and it's just like, this is worse than I've seen since the 70s when I first became a prepper, because I thought the world was going to end then. But those were all built on one little thing that if it happened, like the, you know, stars aligning and ooh, ah, but we had a good economy. We had good politicians that weren't trying to cash in on their golden parachutes and just leave America high and dry. So maybe many of you can relate to this feeling of uncertainty. You know, as Christians, we sometimes will turn to our religious beliefs to give us comfort and some strength. But when you really know the plan, it doesn't seem like the Calvary is going to come in, because it's supposed to do these things just like the sun is supposed to come up. And, you know, if you're a vampire, that might be a bummer, but that's the way it does it. And so I believe that, you know, this opposition in all things is part of the plan. So I can find comfort in knowing that whether I like it or not, or whether it collapses or not, it's part of the plan. But part of the plan might be me dying some horrible death. I'm really not into thinking about that, because it would still suck. Might be part of the plan, but it would suck. So, you know, we all want to get to heaven. No one wants to die. And I think it's because the death part of it is so scary. It's like, how are you going to die? You know, you cut yourself really bad. A year later, you think back on it and it makes you cringe. And you're like, man, that really hurt. At the moment, it didn't hurt that bad. So we look at things from a weird perspective and we go, I don't want to die that way. But it's part of the plan. So I don't find a lot of comfort. I find comfort in knowing that it's moving along according to God's plan. I just don't like the uncertainty of where I should be standing as the plan unfolds, because that's something he's kept very secret. So it's a confusing thing. And so I'm having a hard time with it today, and I hope you all bear with me, because it's really kind of got me uncertain and weary. So I'll take a short break and come back and wrap all this all up.
Shelby Gallagher here, letting you know the second book in my book series, A Great State, is set for release on October 28th. Book 2, The Aftermath, is a continuation of the story from The Divide, where our main character, Julie, a single mother, preps for a collapse. Her story is one of overcoming, strength, and prepping as her community crumbles around her. Sound like recent headlines? Book 2 continues the story with tragic details of what life will be like for those who don't prepare. Pre-order your copy now at my website, agreatstate.com.
So no matter how much I rant and rave, normally I like to wrap things up with a pretty little bow. We can't control the thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people that are working against us, whether it's good intentions with the economy, but yet there's so many people doing so many things. Politicians, we really have no control over them because we've lost our republic. So I'm going to say that we always need to be aware, situational awareness of our environment in these latter days, these last days before the balloon goes up, the crap hits the fan, end of the world as we knew it, is triggered and just collapses. Pull the rug out from under you, just house of cards, all flat on the table now. And I think the best way to do it is to, like I was saying, find a comfortable baseline for you and your family, or just you or your friends, however you're going to deal with SHTF. Find a place, a visualized existence that would be stripped down but would still make you comfortable, you know, as long as you have, you know, your food, your water, and a good shelter, and you can go out and work your fields or hunt. And yeah, you're going to always have to be on guard, but you might want to be further away from cities and stuff. Find that happy place, as Happy Gilmore said, and then put a price on it. What would it cost you to acquire, pay for, and fix up that first base, like I was calling it? What would be the dollar amount to buy the raw land, or buy land with a small home on it? And who cares if it's got an odd house? put in a septic tank, get some solar panels, work on it for 1, 2, 5 years, whatever, to where it's somewhere where you can transfer your life over to there. And that's your first base. Would you be able to move there and live there with your work? Would your skills and your trade transfer to maybe a more isolated area? I've lived in small towns a lot of my life, and I find that in my profession of construction and doing floor covering, there's always been work. Might not have made, you know, as much money as I could have made somewhere else, but then again, I was living in a stripped down existence starting out. So I didn't have college funds because I didn't have kids yet. So when you're doing the math, you have to look at it and go, yes, I'll make a 50, 60% cut in pay. But if you take all of your overhead right now and you cut that by 60% by moving over there, then you don't, it becomes relevant. You need less because you have less. And you don't have electric bills and all that. Maybe you're growing most of your food, so you don't spend as much at the store on this organic food that you buy at the supermarket that's laced with garbage anyway. So start there and go, okay, in 5 years, we will have children then, or we won't have children then, or they'll be at this age then, and then put together a game plan to start achieving that. Because the worst case scenario is the world ends and you're ready for it. If nothing happens, you're still living a good life. And like I said, you can always then get this to first base and then start planning on going to second base. So you might think you're already at third base where you are now, but you're in a place to where if it falls apart, you can't sustain it. So you want to jump back to first base to where it is sustainable, and then create a second base that is also sustainable. So you're just moving maybe to bigger property or adding onto your house or putting in more solar panels or bringing your standard of living up. Even if you're still on first base, you have a nicer home. Maybe you work out a barter to get a newer tractor. Whatever it is, then you plan for that and you move in that direction. And I think that would give most of us that have this dark feeling a little peace of mind, because once you know that you are in a safe place and that you've built your own safety net, you're going to feel better. You're going to wake up a little less apprehensive. You're going to enjoy your day more. And that's worth a lot right there. But we're not going to be able to stop the tsunami when it hits. Because you can't. But you can definitely be on higher ground because you knew the tsunami was coming. And you had figured out how high you need to be so you and your family will be okay. Now, to do this little planning thing, you're going to need to work on your mindset. And it's hard to say, I have this level of lifestyle and I'm intentionally going to dial it back to this. That takes some mindset on you and your spouse and your children, your team, whatever. They need to have the same mindset to go, not really a fan of this, but you know what? That would be a better starting point than where we are right now, because if it collapsed right here, we would definitely be in bad shape. So if we get over here and get in good shape, when it collapses, nothing changes. We're still in good shape. So you got to work on your mindset. I always call skills the number two principle is learning skills. And the reason for that is they can't be stolen. They don't need their batteries replaced. Can't be taxed out of existence. You can give them away all day long and still have as much as when you started. So it's kind of an unending fountain of how much skills you can impart on other people and not lose them yourself, because they're still there also. Skills are good, and my trick to learning skills is, like with our room addition or house addition, it's bigger than a room. I have seen footings put in and stem walls built, and I've read a lot of it. And so this time it required me to actually build a footing and build the stem wall. And so I watched and watched and watched, and I went, this is what I want it to be. I want it to be level all the way across and side to side. I want it to be smooth so I can dry stack my bricks, and then I'll grout the bricks. And when I'm done, I don't want them all jick-jacked at the top. I want them nice and flat. And I achieved that by knowing every step as I did it. It's like, well, for the footing to be level, the forms have to be level. To do that, I need to learn how to use a transit or a laser transit, which is so accurate, it was almost annoying. You know, and then I just took it step by step by step. Now, I've had contractors come by and go, who'd you have build your stem wall? And my wife's like, oh, we did that. And he's like, I can't find a mason to build me a stem wall in town. Well, that must be a skill that somebody could bring to this town that would probably make good money. Now, I dry stacked them. I didn't set them with mortar. So it was a little easier. I didn't have to learn how to do mortar. But the whole process from beginning to end took a lot of study and a lot of visualizing it and trying to figure out, if this is what I want, what do I need to do? So as I'm going along, every step leads to that final outcome of what I want. And anything that's not leading that way, if the forms aren't level, then my footing won't be level, and therefore my bricks won't be level. So anything that's not going to meet my goal is the wrong way. It's either right or wrong. So that's a skill I learned. And I always tell people, if you're going to build a shed, build it yourself. Draw the plans. Figure out how many 2x4s and screws and sheets of sheathing and roofing you need. Draw it all up. Draw it to scale. And then go, oh, how far apart should the studs be? It's like, well, I don't know. I've never built a shed. Google it. 16 on center. Oh, so I need that many. How do I frame it? Google that. Start here. Go that direction. How do I put the siding on? And the whole process becomes many, many skills. You just don't have the skill of building a shed. You have the skill of drawing your plan, pricing out your plan, figuring out the materials and how they're used and why do you need them for your plan. So you end up with quite a few skills. This should be something that every prepared person should be doing. You can say, I'm prepared for the end of the world. I had built my bug out retreat. I had the contractors come in and pour my footings. I had bricklayers pour my stem wall and build my stem wall. I had framers build my house. Well, that's great. You have it all. But if you had to build it, even a scaled down version of it, then you really don't have the skills. You had the money, but when money becomes useless, you will need the skills because you need to know how to frame up your retreat, your bug out location, your log cabin. And people have been doing it for thousands of years, so it can be figured out. But, you know, take on that extra burden of building your own 10x10 shed in your backyard. Build it. If it starts looking a little crooked and out of level, start over. Go, what did I do wrong? Fix it, and then keep going. And you learn so many skills that way, from building footings to foundations and how big they need to be. And then it'll say something about your area. You need to be, you know, 6 inches minimum below frost line. And that doesn't mean 6 inches below the dirt. That means you have to go look up your frost line and then go 6 inches below that. You learn that and you're like, oh, this area requires this. Why is that? Oh, well, because your frost line is this. Oh, so that means I can't grow carrots this time of year because they'll freeze. See, you pick up all this residual stuff from it. So you need to learn your skills. And then when it comes to gear, I'm not a gear junkie, but my gear is always purchased based on my project that I'm building. So I have a really nice welder. I only needed it once, but if I would have paid a welder to do what I wanted with that, you know, built, it would have cost more than my welder. So it took some time to learn how to do it. It took a lot of study. And now I have my it, my thing, and a welder. So it cost me a little less, and I ended up with a piece of gear, piece of equipment. And you want to do that with, you know, hammers, screwdrivers, socket sets, wrenches, whatever your project is. Don't go borrow it. Find out what you need and then buy it. It's going to save you more than having a mechanic do it, and you learn that. So your gear's always predicated on your skills, rest on your mindset. If you decide to build it, then you will build it. When you build it, you will learn and you will pick up skills. And those skills will, and the building process will require gear, because it doesn't take a lot of gear. You know, I was surprised at how little gear Jeremiah Johnson and Hugh Glass actually carried with them. And they were the ultimate prepper bushcraft people. I mean, we learn from them in history. They had a little haversack. They had, some things that were necessary. They always had a knife. They had their flintlock gun. They had powder and ball. And a horse. That was it. They didn't have tactical gear. They didn't have tactical vests. They didn't have all this stuff that we put so much value on. And people will say, you're not a prepper if you don't have all this stuff. It's like, yeah, tell that to Jedediah Smith and Hugh Glass, because they survived grizzly bear attacks with nothing more than a needle, some thin sinew, stitched themselves up, and kept on going. Hugh Glass drug himself hundreds of miles until he could walk. He didn't just sit there and call 911. And all he had was the people that abandoned him took all his gear. So you don't need a lot of gear. It's nice to have. But I think the gear that's important is the gear that supplements your skills. Buy good tools and then build good things. And you learn. And trust me, I could probably build a shelter out in the forest with nothing but a framing hatchet and a pocket knife and have a pretty waterproof shelter that wouldn't collapse under the snow, because now I understand structural engineering to a point. How to build that shelter to where it evades water. It's built in the right location to where it gets the sun at the right time. The water coming off the hill will go around it. All these things were learned by doing dopey projects throughout my whole life. And all the gear I have, other than my camping gear, which is just camping gear, is my prepping gear. And so I can't stress it enough. It's uncertain out there. I think we're not just standing very close to the edge of a precipice. I feel in my gut, and hopefully I'm wrong, that these are very uncertain times. I think they're all very precariously held together these days. And because it transcends so many aspects of our country and our freedom and our economy and our health, that it's very shaky. And hopefully I'm not the only person that has this feeling of uncertainty, because I would hate to talk all this talk and have everyone in the audience go, I feel fine. Everything's great. I think most people, when they really look at the big picture, see that it's gotten quite fuzzy. And so the only way I can think to rid myself of the discomforting feeling that I have is to make sure that I'm squared away at first base. And we kind of are. And that's why now we're adding on to our house. We're moving toward a bigger second base. But if that doesn't happen, I can downsize those drawings really quick. I'll have a big stem wall that I could add on to later on, but I could still stay here, be comfortable, and not have to make any more money than I do right now. So my first base is secure. And now I'm moving to a second base. But I don't like the uncertain feelings because it really makes it hard to look forward to a future that is more upbeat, more positive, more prosperous. I don't see that out there. I don't even see how it could exist unless I had like triple thick rose-colored glasses. You know, nothing has gotten better. It might not have gotten worse in a lot of areas, but over the last 20 years, it has not gotten better. You know, money, the value of the dollar is going down. That means everything is going up in price, yet I'm still being paid the same as I was 20 years ago. So I'm not seeing a very happy prospect in the future. So I'm hunkered down mentally to work on first base and build me a nice second base and try to impart with most of my listeners and viewers on YouTube that we could all be wrong and everything could be wonderful. But that's not why we prepare. We prepare because we, in our guts, think this is no longer sustainable. And so try to find your new happy space. Do the math, dial it back, and free yourself from the burdens and the chains that bind you. When it collapses, then you won't be chained to the galley going down with the ship. So that's my hope. I'll try to be a little more upbeat next week. How about that? That's a positive note. I'm not really that depressed. It's just hard to talk about things when they're so uncertain because you can't bring any certainty to the conversation. I guess that's why prophets used to prophesy, because they really weren't sure unless somebody showed them a sign that this is what's coming. The rest of the time, it's just like, I have no idea what's on TV tonight. I guess we'll find out at 7 o'clock when we flip it on. So you guys all have a great week. And remember to shoot over to ContraRadioNetwork.com, where all the shows from Jeffers Brief, Prepping 2.0, and my show are there. We're starting to bring some other folks into the lineup. I think it's Red State Underground with Don Lowry. Brings a lot to the table. He's very politically active in our community. He gets people elected. He really goes out there. So he can help you if you want to work toward a candidate. He's the guy that knows how to do it. He's been doing it a long time. He's gotten representative and people in Congress elected through his, you know, ground game and his efforts. And then you got the Jeffers Brief. He's just a great guy and probably has so much information. He has a hard time bringing it all to light. Awesome dude, very intelligent, and brings a different perspective to it. And then we're trying to get some gals on to bring the ladies' side of being prepared, the ladies of the watch. They had a podcast for a while on Blog Talk Radio, and we're trying to get them back podcasting again. Always interesting to hear a lady's point of view on prepping, because they don't want to starve and die either. So get them involved. And so that'll be new to the lineup. And then you have Prepping 2.0, like Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher, who bring a whole different point of view. And between all those points of view, I think we cover the whole gamut. I don't think you need to listen to anybody else. But I could be wrong. You guys all have a great week. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.